corrugated stainless steel. And it's free when you buy any one of these products.
Hello everyone and welcome to the State Nice podcast for the National Women's League. Today I'm joined by the analyst Nick Welch. How are you doing?
Not bad, Caleb. Thank you.
Today we're just going to be having a quick look at what's been making news in the National Women's League recently. Obviously there's the All-Star game coming up at the Witten Oval. There's been a lot of rumours in regards to players moving to the National Women's League from other sports, and there's been a bit of general news that's come up recently.
Definitely.
Yeah, so Nick, do you want to take us through what's been happening in the last week or so?
Well, this week is... last week was sort of the week that clubs could recruit their priority pick selections for players who had a pre-existing relationship with the club. And most clubs have picked up most of their players. I think GWS has a couple of picks left and Brisbane, I think, has one. So most of that's been moved on. You know, most of the clubs have their two marquee players and their one priority pick selection. It was a big week for women's footy in the media. You know, a lot of the footy shows, Mongrel had an all-female panel, 360 had them on, you know. Footy show didn't have anything, I don't think, but that's not unexpected from them. God. So that was obviously in the build-up to the women's league, women's game, sorry, tomorrow night. And obviously it was also in the news in regards to the pay and the insurance issue and, you know, a lot of people commentating how they haven't been paid enough for the effort that they're putting in. But we're not here to talk about that. So what we are here to talk about is, listening to the podcast on the AFL website about the Women's League, the Bulldogs coach, Paul Groves, said that they're looking at signing players from other sports, and you get two priority pick signings for a player who wasn't registered for a club before June, when they announced the teams, you know, when they announced that they were going to have a league. So he said that... Clubs are doing them quite differently. You know, we've looked at GWS, Fremantle, Melbourne and that. A lot of them are running sort of academies or training sessions, open invitations for athletes from other sports to try and demonstrate that they've got a football ability. But he said on the podcast that they're actually just quietly behind the scenes contacting... They were very close to signing one player and looking... at it, like, you know, one or two others just for their final spot. So it is interesting to see how clubs are doing different things to try and fill their list. The interesting thing is the impact that these players from other sports could have. It's a bit undetermined. We know that there's been quite a few players who have moved over. You know, Brianna Davey is a marquee player from the Matildas is the best example. But I think... the club that can sign the best players or work out what skills transition over to footy best could have an edge, because there's no doubt some of these athletes are very talented and they could make an impact in women's footy.
Mm. So just in relation to the women's game, the All-Star game this weekend, obviously it's been playing at the Witten Oval, there's going to be... like, it's free entry, so I might actually get down.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot to take away.
It's going to be a good game.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot to take away from that game because, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how some of these players perform and how that will affect them come the National Women's League next season.
Well, every single player who's playing in the game tomorrow will get drafted for a club because it's the game's absolute cream.
They're marquee players.
The marquee player. Well, you know, 14 of them or 16 of them are already marquee players, and that's, you know, a third or a quarter of the players already playing in the game. Plus, you got your priority picks already there. So it's about a third of the players have already been assigned to a list. Mm-hmm. So that means that there's 30 or 40 odd of the best players in the country, aside from those marquee players and priority picks, which means that they're going to be drafted because there's, you know, 200 players playing in the women's league, you know, 18's a list of about 25. So, and the thing is, there's only a handful from each state, so there's only like a couple from Tasmania and New South Wales, and they're the players that are just going to go to GWS because that's their state-based draft zone. There's only, you know, a dozen or so players from Western Australia, and they're going to be assigned to Fremantle as part of the state-based draft. So, and then you have four Melbourne teams who are drafting from the Victorian-based players, you know, the strongest club. So, these players are all going to get drafted, so they're not playing for a contract, so to speak. But there still is a lot of things that, from a list management perspective, that the clubs are going to take away. I mean, Paul Groves in that same podcast said that they're just going to let the girls play to try and improve their draft stock. They're not going to ask them, like, you know, they're not going to tag, or they're not going to give them too much onerous roles to try and let the players themselves improve their draft stock. So the clubs will be analysing the players simply because it's a much higher level of competition and a lot more similar to what will be being played in the National Women's League compared to local footy. And a good game from any one of these players could rise right up the draft boards of some of these list management teams. When we head down there tomorrow night, I'm going to keep an eye out for any people taking notes or any list managers, because believe me, there'll be representatives from every of the eight clubs there looking at.
There's a lot of interest coming from a lot of clubs, obviously, because they need a...
There has to be. Because they wouldn't be doing their jobs if they weren't looking at them.
Mm.
And especially if these clubs... I mean, we talked about it a lot last week and how these clubs are building sort of depth in certain positions or certain types of play. It would be interesting to see the clubs, you know, looking at certain types of players to recruit, because, you know, Collingwood have Moana Hope, so they've got a goal kicker. So they don't necessarily need to draft another one.
They've also got Emma King, who's a ruck forward.
Ruck forward. So they've got a lot of goal kicking.
She's the best ruck in Australia.
If anything, they should probably
be looking at midfield.
Midfielders or defenders. So they'll be looking at the game from the perspective of maybe with the first pick in the draft, or their first pick drafting a defender. The thing is, and also with the priority pick selections play from other sports, maybe they won't have a position yet because they haven't played much footy, or maybe they will. They're starting to sort of get a semblance of where their list is at. And then the draft on October 10, there's still quite a bit of time, and we'll preview the draft a lot between now and then as part of this new separate podcast for the National Women's League. It is a very critical game. And a lot of what's been going on in the media about promoting the game, that's been absolutely brilliant, you know, for the women and getting more exposure. But a lot of that's been done to promote the entertainment value of the game, you know, to use this as a way to transition into the new season and to get a lot of fans watching. But we're here looking at it from a list manager or a draft perspective. So even though obviously scouts heading forward for the draft will be looking at all the state league games for the team inside, you know, for the state that the team is based in, this is a very, very critical game, probably the most critical game out of any of them from the list manager perspective, especially because it's the most recent game.
Before the draft.
I mean, the draft is only 6 weeks away, and that's 6 weeks of planning that they need to look at, you know, with the final series going on with the local leagues, but also this big game that there's a lot of, you know, note-taking that has to go on.
And whilst it's an exhibition match and more of an all-star match, something that will attract fans.
And modified rules as well, the 16 players.
There's a lot of underlying factors that could impact the National Women's League football game in more than an exposure sense.
There's
definitely more factors to be played out.
But also, it'll be interesting to see how the 16 aside, and because they could bring in these rules next season, they're going to analyse the impact on the game that the smaller ball and the 16 aside do. So... if certain players play better with the modified rules, you know, maybe because there's less congestion going on.
Much more freedom
to roam around the field. Maybe that tips the balance into players who are good out in space as opposed to good players in congestion. Whether that influences list management decisions. And if I was employed at any of these clubs as a National Women's League, you know, involved in list management, I'd want to know pretty soon what rules they are going to use moving forward, because 16-a-side footy is a lot different than 18-a-side footy.
Yeah, there's not as much, like...
congestion.
Well, yeah, there's not...
More room to run.
Look, it's going to be a lot more open than you would expect in a match.
Plus, obviously, a smaller ball as well. So, whether that means, you know, maybe there's less demand for inside midfielders heading forward.
Maybe more outside midfielders. Rebounding defenders.
So... That could tip the scales of the draft. And what does it mean for clubs who recruited a lot of midfielders? You know, the Bulldogs and that, you know, two midfielders in their three players so far, two inside midfielders. I think it's Fremantle. Adelaide's another one that has three midfielders. So these are the players, the clubs that if they had 16 aside footy heading forward, maybe if you take two wingmen out to make it 18 aside, and the game is less midfield oriented, maybe these clubs that will suffer. So they probably want an answer quick, smart.
Mm.
And also, I think we should just talk about the news that came out about the payment and the insurance and what it means from a club's list manager perspective or the talent pool.
Mm. I read this article online about how some AFL players, some of the men's AFL players, receive around $4,000-$4,500 per match. And then I saw another statistic that said some women only earn $5,000 per season.
Well, the $5,000 is a minimum amount. So that a late draftee or sort of a post-draft free agent that gets picked up is earning $5,000 a year. But when they have to shell out for their own insurance, that's probably could cost them, $1,500 or $2,000. So that's a fair chunk of their salary gone. Whether that means, certain players might not commit to the league, or players who otherwise might, transition over to footy from other sports won't because of the money involved. It's really disappointing, purely from trying to get the best talent involved in the league. You don't want to run the risk of, and a lot of the female players have said, they don't mind, they're just happy that they're getting paid, there's a professional league in that. They're just doing that when being asked from the AFL or from people, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. So it means you have to have money to play because, you have to work another job and you have to be in a position of employment where your employer is letting you, train and work and play and all that sort of stuff. So whether that means that a lot of the players have retired or moved away from footy because they just can't cope with the demands alongside their employment.
Mm.
And the other thing about not paying these players as much as some people would hope is that there's only very limited training time. I think they said it was only 9 hours a week in the pre-season that they get to spend. That's one day's worth of, when you think about compared to the AFL, that's one day's worth of training or video analysis or team meetings or whatever. So how can you expect these players to develop? How can you successfully develop a player's talent when, they're just not spending that much time or getting paid that much? When you look at the clubs who want to recruit players from other sports, it's no different to men's footy, with how they recruit American players. If these players, if they hadn't played footy as a junior or they're very athletic and they're being recruited for athleticism, there's absolutely no way that these players can transition to an elite level.
If they don't have the right training facilities. Or just
the time, just the 9 hours a week. So the AFL, from a list manager and talent pool perspective, is missing out on a massive range of potential players because clubs might be adverse to recruiting players from other sports if they don't have the time to, reteach in the game development. There's tall basketballers that they could recruit, and the thing is, with not paying them as much, these players from other sports could get as little as $5,000 a year. The AFL run to push forward a big show about, wanting to recruit players from other sports, leaking things. We've talked about in the show, leaking things to the media, stuffing microphones in the face of players from other sports. And if they're just not getting paid that much, there's no incentive for them to move over, so...
Exactly. Imagine some of the women who play for the Australian rugby sevens team at the Olympics. They won gold medals.
And they get funded because, the likelihood of winning a gold medal means that there's funding from government bodies.
And exactly. And when you look at that and the fact that if they were to move to the AFL, they'd only be earning this amount of money and they'd only be having this amount of time devoted to training.
Yeah.
Personally, if I was from the rugby women's team, I wouldn't have any intention of moving over just simply because of the lack of pay and the lack of time and effort put into it.
And we're not trying to be we're not trying to discuss this as from the matter of whether it's fair or not. It's not our position to talk about that. We're just talking about what the implications for list management. So the fact is, it's an investment into the future. If you invest in the women's footy now, it means that more and more female athletes, girls and that growing up, would want to play footy as a viable career path, which means that the depth of talent on offer and the amount invested in the list manager and the amount invested in the footy department of the club will just increase because there's a larger talent pool to pick from. There's more interest in the game. So they're just sort of, and you know, and we know owner of the AFL makes investment. It made investments into the Northern States. It makes investments into the academies of the Northern State clubs. So they should see it as an investment into the future. And it would be absolutely brilliant if we saw more, you know, if we saw, and it should be, the women's footy should be on level pegging with the men in terms of amounts invested in footy department, you know, scouting of the leagues and that. So I think the problem the AFL had was that they didn't want to overinvest too much in the women's league, because a lot of new leagues fail if they overinvest early. But it is a bit disappointing, because all the promise that a national women's league offers isn't going to come to full fruition if we don't get the best possible depth of talent in the talent pool from players from all over the country in all different sports. So I think it's just a little disappointing from a purely as a football fan who wants to see the best talent on display.
Yeah. Finally, we'll just conclude with one last thing. How do you feel that the clubs can move forward with their lists?
Well, there's certain steps that they have to take, and even before the draft, there's certain processes that the club makes. So, okay, every club has made their marquee signings, and most clubs have made their priority pick selections for clubs, you know, for the player, sorry, who had a pre-existing relationship with the club.
Yeah.
Now it's just I think it was this week or next week where it's the limit for recruiting players from other sports, you know, non-registered players, players who haven't played foot in the last few months. So most clubs will start to have a semblance of a list, you know, handful of players, half a dozen players here or there. And the reason that these clubs are running these academies is because there is a deadline. I think it might be this week, today or next week, to recruit their two players from other sports. So we'll slowly start to see the news releases of which players are recruited. Then from that point onward, the players are more interested in their finals footy. You know, the women's VFL finals are on next week. So there's going to be a lot of scouts watching the finals games around the country to see if any player impresses in a certain role or something. So then that leaves them probably about a month until the draft. That means that there's going to be a lot of, you know, because a lot of the teams are very small at these clubs. They've got the support systems, you know, from the footy department bosses up top, you know, the CEOs and that. But in terms of the actual material decision makers, most clubs are only going to have a grouping between maybe two or three or four people. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of meetings, discussions about how to build around teams, whether or not the marquee players at the clubs, you know, all the priority picks have a say in the list manager decision. At Carlton, certainly will. I think with Meg Hutchings, she actually works
at Collingwood.
She actually works as part of the footy department, you know, and she'll actually make influence list management decisions for Collingwood. Yep. So I'm sure the 4 or 5 weeks between the end of the season and the draft will just be a lot of planning. I mean, scouting, reviewing video footage and drafting, especially in a battle between the Melbourne clubs, because there's four clubs in Melbourne all battling for the same pool of players based here in Melbourne. And finally, on top of that, after the draft on October 10, I think it is, you're allowed to pick players, you know, from any club who missed out on the draft. So I'm sure there's a lot of scouting going on elsewhere to see if players are happy to, you know, relocate interstate to top up the list. You know, maybe there's depth in positions, especially because there's only lists of 25. So that means there's no, like, reserves, there's no depth to build upon. So the clubs will need to get their balance of positions perfect, because in a match of, you know, 22 players, you know, whether it's 6 on the bench and 16 or 8 on the bench, 18 on the field and 4 on the bench, that's only, they're taking their 25 to every game, you know, their 3 emergencies and your 22 players. So there's no leeway for these clubs if they stuff up their balance of their team list. So say a club just happens in the draft, they draft the players that they like, and they end up with too many midfielders or forwards or defenders or anywhere. But that's where the free agency critical period is critical, because you're recruiting your final handful of players up to 25 to make sure that you've actually got a well-balanced list. And because of the nature of the draft system and the way that the players are distributed, it's going to be a very even season. So the team that can draft effectively, not so much in regards to the ones that pick the best players, but ones that actually get a balanced depth of talent across all areas of the game, you know, through ruck, midfield, forward and back,
yeah,
are the ones that are probably going to most likely have a good season because of that critical element of, you know, having the right balance. You only got 25 players on the list, so it's just a matter of having good depth of talent across the entire field.
Well, that'll conclude our special edition for the State Knives podcast in relation to the National
League. We probably should do it next week. We might do a review of the exhibition game and see how that impacts list management for clubs next week. So
yes, we will be doing that. So look forward to that next week. Thanks again, Nick, for joining us.
Definitely. Thank you, Caleb.
And we'll see you guys next week.